Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our colorful conversation with 95-year-old Delton Wally Walling of Valley Springs, California, originally from Belding, Michigan, a small town on the Flat River east of Grand Rapids. He wanted to join the Navy bad enough before World War II that he gave up a finger. If you missed that explanation at the start of the program, you can always pull up the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also see photographic evidence of that missing digit. Let's take him back to late 1941 now. He's a teenage sailor assigned to the battleship USS Pennsylvania at Pearl Harbor.
What was life like before that attack?
Beautiful days.
Yeah.
Nothing to worry about. Not a thing.
It's a big adventure for you.
Big adventure.
Here's this kid from Michigan, and he's out there in the Pacific with all the pretty ladies and Waikiki Beach. Did you surf at all?
Duke Onamoko, you're a great surfer of the Pacific.
Yeah.
See, I lived in Hawaii just a little bit of time before. And Duke taught me how to surf on this big old wooden board that was 18 inches wide and 14 feet long.
A long board, yeah.
I couldn't even carry it. He dragged it out there for me.
He personally taught you how to surf.
Yeah, but I was never any good because they didn't have time, really didn't have time. But I knew Duke very well. And when I go out there to Hawaii and go out to the beach, I always go into Duke's and sit and chat a while.
I don't think I've ever talked to someone who learned how to surf from Duke himself.
Yeah, the last time I was down, nothing doing before we went back. They had to take me over and stand me in front of the board and take all the pictures.
That's great. That's
the
great.
Last time down.
Next time I see that statue, I'm going to think of you. So you're doing all these things, having all these adventures. It's a great life in the Navy. But December 7th, 1941, that all changed. And you were up early that day, huh?
Because I was a boxer and staying in shape. I always run 20 miles a day. I was out on my run. And then I remembered that I had a friend that was being transferred from the gang. He owed me some money, quite a bit.
Uh-oh.
So at 6:30, I arrived at the tower and thought I'd go up and talk to him and see if I could get some money.
And explain to us what this tower is and what it was used for.
The communication tower at Pearl Harbor that I was on was a water tank with a signal platform on the top.
Right
out in the open, right in all the weather. Just a little shack set 6 foot square right in the middle. And that tower berthed every ship that ever came into Pearl Harbor for 125 years.
In fact, you were just there this last year for the renovation and the dedication of the rebuilt tower. It's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
And I sent it on its next 100 years. Cut the ribbon and set it on its next 100 years in May.
Mm-hmm. But so at that point, this is one of the places where you have to have a shift. You're up there in the tower handling communications?
Yes, because you can see every ship in the harbor from that 180-foot advantage.
This was not your shift. You're out for a run, but you remember, hey, the guy who is on shift is about to ship out, and if I don't go get my money from him now, I'm never going to get it.
That is correct.
So you go up in that tower, 6:30 in the morning.
When I get up there in the tower, the ward is a destroyer that's guarding the entrance to Pearl Harbor. And that morning, we had the Antares, that's a transport, coming back from Palmar Island with a tug tow on behind, a barge tow on behind. And they had stopped out at the entrance to shift the barge over to another tug to take it in the port. And when they went to stop, somebody spotted some strange object in between the tow line and the barge. But before this, at 3 o'clock in the morning, someplace between Pearl Harbor and Honolulu, the midget subs was dropped off in the big subs, someplace in between. Mm-hmm. And so they was maneuvering to go in. This is their idea, to follow ships in.
So these Japanese submarines are all over the place in there.
Well, there's five that came in.
Right.
Well, five didn't get in, but some of them did.
But you don't know this while you're up in that tower.
We have nothing. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. And then all at once, the ward spots this con or something. And so this lieutenant that's on the ward, this is his first day in command of the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a mighty decision that he's going to have to make. Because you don't know, is that friendly or is it an enemy?
And you don't want to be the boy who's crying wolf.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And overhead, there's a PBY-2A2. And they don't want to drop anything on it because they don't know.
Right.
So neither one of them is doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But this lieutenant said full steam ahead, and they went around. And when they come around, they was only 150 yards from that sub.
Mm-hmm.
And all they could see was a con. He just threw caution to the wind and said, fire. Now, number one gun couldn't get low enough and overshot. Number three gun could get low enough, and he hit it. There he is.
You've got a photo with him right there. You guys met at Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
So that's happening before the planes come in?
That's before the planes come in. That's at 6:30.
And are you aware of that up in this tower? Is that message coming to you?
Well, now this has all started. So the ward now, they say sighted sub in restricted area and sunk same. Now, the protocol at that time, you broke it all down in code instead of just sending the message to us.
Right.
And we could talk right to the admiral. It went by code, broke down. Now, this takes time. This is 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
So this 6:30, they break it down, and it goes around us to the headquarters. Kimmel gets out his staff, and they got to study it. Now, they got to verify it. Break it down again, around us it went, and back to the ward. The ward can't say anything, but the same thing. It sunk.
Mm-hmm.
How can they verify it? So, the same thing goes back, you see. Now, it's 7:56, and we're standing there, and it's a beautiful day. And all at once, overhead, we've got planes, high planes, low planes, all coming in on us. Oh, must be a big maneuver today. Those orange balls up there is not ringing the bell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing the bell, even when we see those black objects dropping out of those planes.
It hasn't hit you yet that this is enemy.
That isn't it. Mm-hmm. And when the bomb went off on Fort Allen, and all planes are exploding everywhere, we know we're in war.
And you saw that, clear as day.
I watch it all. I'm the only one that can tell you the Pearl Harbor story, and this is the reason why. I'm looking down on everything. You're on a ship,
mm-hmm.
and that ship gets hit by a torpedo or what? Who sees that? The ship itself. That's all. They can't see beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking down on everything. But remember this, you can't see it all at one time because everything's blowing up at one time.
Right.
So you can't even follow it.
Mm-hmm.
All you can just pick up in pieces. See?
Well, and that's what, you know, on this program over the years, I've heard from guys who are on a lot of different ships or on land while this is happening, and they have those little slivers of the puzzle that they saw from their perspective. And your perspective is intriguing, and what you're saying is you're the last guy left that was in that tower and looking from that spot where you could see each one of these things that's happening. You're, what, 19, 20 years old?
19.
What in the world was going through your head?
I'm froze to the rail because the first thing that happened just before the plane started dropping was Hickam Field is blowing up. It's right behind me. I'm looking, oh, maybe a couple minutes or something before the raid started right over Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So Hickam Field is destroyed immediately. Now I'm froze to that rail because I have joined the greatest navy of all times. And here it is, being blown up in my face in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm devastated because if they can do that in 10 minutes, what else is coming?
Right.
And scuttlebutt is everywhere. They've already landed on the other side and, oh man, you don't know what to believe.
I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff, and I want to hear about that, but I hope I didn't cut you off in describing what you saw there in the order you saw it. So you saw those explosions on Fort Island.
See, the Arizona never blew up till 8:06. It's the last ship that blew up because your California sunk, Oklahoma's rolled over, the Utah's rolled over,
mm-hmm.
and the West Virginia's got hit by at least 7 torpedoes. It's a mess. It went straight down.
And you're seeing each one of these?
I'm seeing it after the fact. Mm-hmm. You cannot possibly see it because you're looking there, a bomb went off, one's already gone there. You're looking and seeing after the fact.
Yeah, you can't keep your eye on everything at the same time.
There's no way.
So you're seeing explosion, fire.
Fire.
And some of the photos that people have seen since, one of the ones that I think turns the most heads is the USS Shaw.
You're exactly right. The Shaw being on dry dock,
right,
up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it was hit and the magazine blew it apart, now that concussion, because they're in the air, just comes high. So we did feel the concussion from where we were at on the tower from the Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
But the Arizona, because it was in the water, and the bomb, see, I'm in that film also called Countdown to Disaster,
mm-hmm,
when the Arizona blew up.
Right.
Now, before the war come along, you had your old box cameras. Now, there was a doctor that lived over on Ford Island right there by the Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
He happened to be out there that morning taking pictures of the Arizona. And he took the pictures as it exploded. But that camera was never found for about 70 years.
Isn't that crazy?
And they found it. Now they're able to enhance it, stop things. So that is why the film is called Countdown to Disaster. Because they start the story at 7:56. That's when the war started with the first bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring it through. They tell stories and they bring it through a few or a minute or two, and then they carry it on through. And then here comes the bomb, and they stop it right off in the number one turret, where it's going to glance off and go into the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And they stop it, and they say, 1 second before disaster. And then, boom, she blows.
All those images that we've seen, you're seeing all of this unfold from this bird's eye view on this tower. At what point do you realize that there's something you can do? Because I imagine for most of that, you just felt really helpless.
We can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way of us doing a thing. All the damage is done. All we can do is try to get the men out of the water. And we have nothing up there. This is not our battle station down below. Our battle station is on the tower. Just as soon as the war started, then all the men that belonged to Kimmel came down. There's a building being built right under the tower. And that's where they took the protection and stayed there in case somebody shot us off in the tower.
Mm.
And so I was there until two shifts. I was there all day and through my shift.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that evening, see, your Enterprise planes started to come in, and they started to come up the channel. Six of them had been out looking for the Japanese fleet. In the southern section, the Japanese are in the north. So they never found them.
But if those carriers had been in the harbor, would have
been gone.
The war would have been over.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. The only reason they weren't there is because they had to slow down in oil.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make them about 10 hours late.
Thank the Lord.
Just the luck. Ooh. See, just luck.
So there, the planes from the carrier USS Enterprise are coming in.
Six of them.
Uh-huh.
Now, they don't know that the ramp and everything's all shot up. There's no way of them landing on it. They're coming in after dark. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started to come up the channel, the loudspeakers come out and said, don't shoot at these planes. They're friendly. I've been in war long enough to know that if one man, one ship, touches off a shell, they're all going to go.
Right.
And so he's coming up the channel, and all at once somebody fires. Boom! Knocked down the first three planes, and only one flyer was saved. I didn't know that, of course. It's dark. I didn't know that until the next day. The other three veered off and went over on one of the Army bases over Schofield. And they started to land over there, and they were shot down. One flyer survived. So two of the six plane flyers survived.
Tragic.
Now, here's another thing that was so much luck. Everybody says, well, what was our planes doing? Why was they doing this and that? That was a lucky situation, because if those flyers had been in their planes and got in the air, they'd all been lost.
Good point.
See? Now your plane's going to be shipped to you. You got your flyers to protect the audience. See? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have had a flyer. All 70-some of them would have been dead.
There are so many of those examples throughout the war, every part of the war. What if this or that had been a little bit different? How different would the eventual outcome have been? We are far from done with 95-year-old Delton Wally Walling. If you want to see the tower he was in on December 7th and find other photos that add to his story, visit the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll explore more of what he witnessed from that tower when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.